Small Biz America.
The brain.
Our guest says that your company needs to grab their prospects' attention in an increasingly shorter amount of time. And why are sales being won or lost in the new economy? It's all about growing your business intelligence. Joining us on the line is Errol Green. He joins us from Verity Insight Partners near Atlanta. Errol, welcome to the program.
Thanks, David. I'm glad to be here.
So you've got some research. I thought that would be a good place to start. Tell us, there are reasons the traditional telemarketing, let's take the telemarketing piece, for leads, it's falling flat in this new economy. What are you seeing there?
Absolutely. We're seeing a move away from traditional lead generation to something called demand creation, which I'll discuss a little bit later. But the primary needs for that, it just we found through our research that there's a number of changes that have taken place since the economy has really taken a turn. And some of those changes, just to highlight them, there's a reduced time that salespeople have access to gain a prospect's attention. Buyers are a lot more savvy, I should say, with more resources to help them make buying decisions. Sales reps, even senior people, for the first time, are having to make cold calls, which they haven't done in years. These are people who generally went in a fairly high level once a opportunity was qualified, but they're actually having to go out and make cold calls, and that's kind of new for them. Mm. There's larger buying committees that have to be navigated. There's a higher level of commoditization in the marketplace, intense pricing pressure like we've never seen before. And just a few new processes that are being added to sales. So, you know, all of this combined has meant that lead generation traditionally, where you went out, you know, looking specifically for somebody who had a targeted need that they were kind of aware of, has kind of gone away. And now you have to do something a little bit more called demand creation, which is really uncovering hidden needs.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does, and we should uncover that. So is the main theme about time here, would you say, based on what you're seeing? Or is there more to it?
No, absolutely. You're right on target, David. One of the things that we have seen, the first point, it's a pretty big difference just in the last couple of years. There's dramatically reduced time to gain a prospect's attention. Now, what do I mean by that? Our research shows that the time salespeople have to gain a prospect's attention used to be around 6 to 7 seconds. And, you know, that's not still a terribly long amount of time.
Yeah.
That is now closer to 2 to 3 seconds. People are just busier. They have more responsibilities due to layoffs. They're doing, in many cases, 2 or 3 jobs. And more salespeople are calling on what is now a smaller pie. A lot of them are being tasked, hey, look, you know, keep your pipeline full or you'll be out of a job. So these people are calling, and these people are inundated. But as you can imagine, getting someone's attention 2 or 3 seconds can be pretty challenging.
Okay. All right. So it is largely about time and not too many other factors, at least from the forefront. Let's talk about the concept, this idea of demand creation. How does it work?
Well, it takes a different approach. It knows that in most cases, people have needs, but they won't possibly even realize what they are. It seeks to uncover hidden pain points that a prospect has and discusses ways to affordably solve them and provide a return on investment. Again, you know, lead generation referred to selling into a known product with a known benefit to a customer that generally understands the value we'll offer. I would liken it to calling into a customer base and asking them, hey, are you ready to upgrade your operations? But the problem is nobody really wants to be sold to today. They've been told, hey, look, you know, our budgets are low, we don't have a lot of money, we need to conserve, that sort of thing. And a lot of times, you know, if you call in and you take this sort of approach, our research shows that this will fall into the category of, you know, somebody just coming back and saying, well, we don't have the budget right now, we're not interested, and it's listed, it goes down in that company's files as an uninterested candidate.
Yeah.
Or prospect. It doesn't necessarily mean, though, that the company doesn't have a need, it just means that the conversation never went far enough to uncover these hidden needs. And, you know, we found, too, that the average rate, even in good times, for a cold call was about 1%. So for every 100 calls you made, you got literally one person who said, yes, I will meet you, and possibly, you know, went on to make a sale. Now, even in the best of times, that's a waste of time.
Right.
So there's a better way. And what we've discovered is the 21st century approach, which is working, is to call in and discover what a specific prospect's pain point is, something that will immediately get their attention, something that you can hit on in 2 or 3 seconds, which is really going to resonate with this customer and say, hey, this is something we're experiencing. I probably do need to talk to this person.
Errol, is there a prescription for how you ask the question? Just largely a matter of style, I would guess.
Yeah, a lot of it just goes down to research. And we've got a number of different ways. You know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are out there saying, well, that's great, you know, but how do I find this out? On our website, Ginger Cooper, our Vice President of Marketing, wrote a great article that's been published on a number of different sites, and it's titled Five Ways to Find Your Prospect's Biggest Problems. And in it, it discusses ways they can do a lot of this for themselves. Let me give you some examples. They can go to the Better Business Bureau website, and you can find customer service-related issues, because anybody who's unhappy is probably going to go there and report it. Conducting a Google search using the prospect's name along with terms such as don't recommend, problem, issue, challenge, cons, you know, things of that nature, is a really good way to uncover issues that might need to be resolved as well. Another thing you can do on Google is compare your prospect to their competitors. And a lot of times you'll find what their strengths and weaknesses are there from their end users. And especially if you offer something that would assist them in improving, that can be a very, very powerful lead generation tool. She suggests visiting your prospect's industry association websites. And this is really a unique and up-and-coming way to do research. Topics for upcoming webinars and conferences are usually the most relevant issues that these organizations think will get the attention and attendance of their attendees. Most often, you can go through their research, find four or five really, really pressing concerns within any given industry, and there's a good chance that if you take, that approach, even in a general way, you're still going to have a pretty decent amount of success leading with one of those topics.
That's fascinating. I love the idea of getting inside the negative, sort of the issues from all of these different directions. We're visiting with Errol Green. Verity Inside Partners is the company. The website, www.verity, that's V-E-R-I-T-Y, insightpartners.com. In a more general sense, I know you've got some insight as to what is happening in terms of sales being won and lost. We've probably hit on some of this. What else do we not get when we're looking to do marketing or sales, create new transactions or leads?
Well, I guess, in a number of different ways, we're seeing that people just really don't want to be sold to right now. That's the big thing that we're seeing and the big thing that we're getting back. Yeah. I mean, honestly, does anybody really, quote-unquote, want to be sold to? I mean, if you call in and, hi, my name is Errol Green and I'm here to sell you something, you can pretty much hear people, locking the doors, quick, turn off the lights, tell them we've gone bankrupt, get the guy out of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, we have to uncover, specific problems and issues. It's funny because even a lot of the sales training companies are that used to be much more generic in their approach. This is the five things you have to do in every sale. They're realizing that that's really changed now, that buyers just don't have time for some sort of a generic overview. They really have to get in to specifics, and they know that they have to get in and really hit a buyer where they live fairly quickly if they're going to gain their attention.
Okay, Errol, I was also going to ask, it looks like you have a two-step process, or first of all, understand that sales is a two-step process as you see it. Tell us about those two steps and how they interrelate and how they produce a sale for a company.
Absolutely, and that's a great question. One of the other big changes that we've seen is in the past, in many cases, the sales goal was simply to sell the prospect on your product or service and then close the sale. And that was usually all that had to be done. It makes sense. You convince them, hey, this is a good thing to move forward with. This makes a lot of sense. Let's go make this happen. But today, with money being as tight as it is, we've seen a lot of prospects say, well, we like your products and services. We even know we need them. But we're just simply not in a position to buy them now. So now virtually every successful sale that we have seen recently, especially in large-scale items, will involve some sort of a detailed ROI document that's on the customer's own numbers, it's based on those, along with the buying options that make it easy for them to buy. In other words, maybe you offer leasing, maybe you offer 6 months, make no payments. We've seen software as a service, the SaaS model, become very, very popular because now instead of having to buy a big software program up front, pay an enormous amount of money, they can literally rent it from month to month, and it just makes it so much easier for these people to afford it. And, if you match that along with an ROI document that says, look, the first month you deploy us, it'll cost you $2,000, but you'll save $5,000. You're much more likely to be able to close that sale. And I would just, warn anybody, skip this last step at your own risk. The most successful companies that we've talked to all have had flexible buying plans, much more successful than they would have been in 2006 and much more flexible.
Does anything in your research suggest that it's better to have a number of options rather than one, or is there a particular number that seems to work best?
You know, I haven't really seen a number, but I will tell you that flexibility, you don't want to give, buyers too many options, because obviously that's going to confuse them.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that.
Five or ten things to choose from. Now, it's like going to a restaurant with 5,000 things on the menu. You can never make up your mind. But if, let's say, you have two or three options that are going to fit, most budgets, for large companies, this is going to generally work well for them. For, smaller companies, this is going to work well for them. For companies that don't have a lot of cash but need our services, this is going to work well for them. Having, I would say on average 2 to 3 options at a minimum, and no more than probably 5, is probably the most effective way to go. Again, it gives enough flexibility that there's probably something they can fit into, but it's not so many that it's hard to make a decision.
Errol Green, in your travels, do you have a sense of the dynamic change between small businesses doing business with other small businesses or small businesses prospecting for larger accounts? Any sense of a difference in how to approach those two sales problems?
Actually, I have seen a little bit in regards to companies maybe being a little more willing to work with small businesses. We have done some research, and the way we found that is we work with a number of small companies. And when we've called out in research to see if they would be good prospects for this particular company, because that's one of the services we offer, what we found is that a lot of people realize that in the current economy, there are people who are experienced, there are people who are very knowledgeable, but maybe got laid off from their company. And they realize that in order for the new economy to grow, people have to be willing to take a risk on smaller businesses. You can't always go with IBM. You can't always go with Microsoft. Sometimes it probably does make sense. You're going to be a big fish in their pond, and you're literally getting a level of expertise and a level of care with a small business that you might not get elsewhere. So, I actually have, in much of our research, seen more of an emphasis on we are open to doing business with smaller companies.
Errol, tell us more about Verity Insight Partners. What does your client base look like? What kinds of services do you offer? Just give us a tour of Verity, if you would.
Well, we're a sales and marketing research company, and we have a variety of different areas that we focus in. One of the more popular focuses we've got now is our outreach lead generation. And again, people are probably asking, well, how do I uncover this specific information? And how do I know that I'm not wasting my time calling on a company that they actually are a good fit for my value proposition? What Verity does is we call into these companies and we attempt to uncover what is your buying style, what are the obstacles that you would face, if you were going to go out and try to buy this type of a service or product. What are the issues? Who are the people that you have to sell this to? What's the budget? What's the timeline? What would prevent you from buying? What's your opinion on some of the other marketers and competitors out in this market? And what we do is we hand it back to our customers, essentially a roadmap into how to make the sale. And I think the best part about this, David, is that our customers have an opportunity to see, hey, this is a good use of my sales resources. Here's 10 or 15 accounts that we can genuinely win. They get our value proposition. If we're the Ritz-Carlton, we're not trying to sell to a company that's looking for a Motel 6.
Yeah.
So again, it's a focus of resources into business you can win, because there's a lot of companies out there wasting a lot of money and a lot of time on business that they simply can't win or shouldn't be involved in the first place. Another thing we do is win-loss analysis, and we recommend that to all of our customers and virtually any company. Whether you do it with us, whether you do it internally, it's usually best to get a third party so they'll feel free to speak openly. But companies need to be aware of the issues, what's preventing them from winning sales, what's causing them to lose sales. Many times a customer doesn't want to, what we call, tell you that you have an ugly baby. It's a funny example, but it's true. If you have an ugly baby, nobody really wants to tell you that you've got an ugly baby, but they'll tell the neighbor you've got an ugly baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times by having a third party call in and say, hey, what's really going on here, you get to the real bottom of why you're winning and losing, what you can do to increase your win rate. We've also got a number of services that do customer satisfaction studies. We do insight into market needs, what the market is going to need if you've got a new product launch out there, where it will be most successful, how to position your product to be most successful, things of that nature. And again, it's really, we feel best to go out and find out out exactly what the market needs rather than assume it and make some expensive mistakes.
Well, this happens with innovation too, where you see ideas looking for a customer rather than problems looking for a solution. It often is the case. Errol Green, we'll do this again for sure, continuing with Verity Insight Partners, their insights on why sales can work and telemarketing and a lot more at www.verityinsightpartners.com. And that's Verity as in V-E-R-I-T-Y, insightpartners.com. Errol Green, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
David, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Small Biz America.
The Brain.
Online at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz.
Small Biz America.